28, hello, everyone. I'm so sorry that we took Chuck a while. Desmond. Everyone's very, very busy today, so I appreciate everyone's patience. Today is February 9th, 2016. This is the Joint Committee Ways and Means on Natural Resources, and we're going to go ahead and open a work session on Department of Agricultural. We're going to hear about the Asian gypsy moth infestation request, and I'm going to turn it over to LFO, and they're going to he's going to explain to us what this is all about.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the department is here requesting a general fund appropriation in the end of session bill and an increase in federal fund expenditure limitation for eradication of a Asian gypsy moth infestation in Northwest Portland, and I believe members of the department are here and others are here to speak to that.
Okay. I am going to go ahead and ask that we have the agency come up and explain this to us, what's going on. And in the meantime, I'm going to hand out, they have been to my office to explain the situation, what's going on. This is going to be a program where we're going to be getting some federal dollars to address it. And they brought us some examples of the gypsy moth that I'll hand pass around so everyone can see.
Oh, yeah. I don't
Thank you.
Good morning,
Good morning.
Co-Chair Taylor and members of the committee. I'm Lauren Henderson. I'm the Assistant Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I thought, with your permission, what I would do is just introduce this subject and then step back and let my experts come to the table.
Sure.
We had planned on a 15 to 20 minute presentation, a little bit of the background, and then why this is so important for us to deal with this pest. With that, though, I did want to mention this is a pretty sizable request for our agency. The program in our base budget, the Insect Pest Prevention Management Program, at its core is really about surveys and trying to identify either potential pests or real, and that's where we're at today is real through that survey program, and I'll let the staff talk more about that. This was a huge effort. Oregon is not alone. Washington had similar finds in their state, and so the two states have been working very closely together, and I have to give a shout out to the USDA APHIS. They really did step forward in their funding of $1.7 million, not only for Oregon, but for Washington. Historically, when we've had emergent issues like that, we felt lucky to get 50% of the funding. We got a lot more than that. We're up at the 76% range of federal contribution towards this. So that gives you the significance of the Pacific Northwest and what it means if we were to have an established population of Asian gypsy moth here. So that's an important note with that. And so I do have extra handouts of what's on OLIS if anybody wanted to see that. There is a map in there that describes the area that we found them that I think the staff will go into that too. Along with that, we're lucky to have Mr. John Reed with the Portland Parks and Recreation Department. I'm going to ask him to come up with our two staff. This is definitely in their area and affects them. And so with that, I'll step back unless anybody has any questions for me. Okay, guys.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the records, members of the committee, for the records, my name is Helmut Rock. I'm the director of the Plant Protection and Conservation Programs area with Oregon Department of Agriculture. And I used to be the manager of the insect program, so this fits right in my alley here. So a short history, Oregon Department of Agriculture has been surveying for the gypsy moth since the mid-70s. We had in the mid-80s the largest gypsy moth infestation west of the Mississippi, and we were successful in eradicating gypsy moth here in Oregon. We had 250,000 acres infested down in Lane County in the mid-80s, and we used for the first time in gypsy moth history in the U.S. BTK, which is the Bacillus thuringiensis product that we will propose to use for this eradication here coming up in Portland. The reason we eradicate, at least in the western states, gypsy moth is because we don't have gypsy moth populations here in the western states. Gypsy moth, the European strain, is well established in the eastern states of the U.S., and we get gypsema by people either moving or bringing their RV to Oregon for vacation, and that's a pathway that we have. So we are putting out tens of thousands of traps here in Oregon to look for any incipient population. As soon as we find them, we delimit the area, and then we usually eradicate that. We've done it now for over 30 years successfully. And the reason we do that is we have quarantine implications if we have established gypsy moth populations here in Oregon. Our nursery industry depends on shipping 80%+ out of their material out of the state. We wouldn't be able to do that easily if we would have established gypsy moth population here in Oregon. This or last year, we had for the first time in 10 years, 15 years, again, Asian gypsy moth. That's a different strain. The difference is that the female with the Asian gypsy moth can fly and is a very strong flyer. So that increases the risk of the gypsy moth to spread out and infest areas larger than we have right now. So Asian gypsy moth comes from the Asian countries. It is not known to occur in the U.S. So this would be, if we don't do anything against it, would be the first infestation we have in the U.S. Everywhere in the U.S. where Asian gypsy moth is intercepted, we do an eradication, and that's what we're proposing this for this year. So I'll pass on, if there's no questions, to my colleague here.
Good morning, Chair Taylor and committee. For the record, my name is Clint Burfitt. I'm the program manager for insect pest prevention and management. A little background, additional background on insect pest prevention and management. This last year, we surveillanced for 140 different quarantine or economic pests at 18,000 different locations. So we're not just specifically looking for gypsy moth. It happens to be a big part of what we do, but we're also working on safeguarding natural resources and agriculture throughout the state. In 2015, to clarify, we did catch 14 gypsy moths statewide, two of which were Asian gypsy moth, and a third Asian gypsy moth was detected in close proximity on the Washington side of the Port of Vancouver. So this is unprecedented, if not highly unusual. The rest of the European gypsy moths were caught. Five of the other European gypsy moths were caught in Multnomah County, and then the other seven were down in Grants Pass. Helmut discussed a little bit about the difference between Asian gypsy moth and European gypsy moth, and I'd just add a little bit about the ecological effects of defoliation in the Pacific Northwest's forests. When you have periodic or cyclic defoliations that basically can change the water quality, it increases stream temperatures, increases the amount of organic material in those streams, and then also increases the sediment load. So when the storms come, it washes the sediment off. This negatively impacts aquatic species in addition to the economic effects. Based on the detections in 2015, USDA put together a group, a science technical working group, that advised the state of Oregon and the state of Washington on how to handle it. They've recommended that we treat approximately 8,000 acres in around the Port of Portland and then also in Forest Park with a product called 4A48B, which is organically labeled for produce and vegetables and is a common occurring soil bacterium. Other than that, the main focus of our project right now has been communication. We've got approximately 30 different communication partners representing 20 different organizations we're communicating with regularly, and we've also reached out to over 70 different organizations, including putting together a social justice committee to address the homeless and then the English second language populations in the area. So we're right now just working a lot on the communication, and eventually we'll go form an incident command system to do the treatments with our forestry partners.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hansel.
For the record, it might be good to enumerate what it is that the gypsy moth does that we don't want the gypsy moth or the Asian to do.
They just won't behave.
Yeah. where is the problem with this species in the Northwest?
Chair, Co-Chair Taylor and Senator Hansel, gypsy moth kills trees.
And how do they, by what method?
It eats the immature form, eats the leaves. It has a tremendous capacity of increasing its population. It eats over 800 different species of plants. So it's one of those things that is not very specific, and when it reaches very high populations, then it damages the forest.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Taylor and Senator Hansel, just to add on that, so since we don't have gypsy moth in Oregon, you can say, how do we know? We know because in eastern U.S. we have every year hundreds of thousands of acres defoliated by gypsy moth. Pennsylvania has to spray this year again several hundred thousand acres of forests to protect the forest from repeated defoliation. If you defoliate a deciduous tree once, that's okay, but if you do it several times over the years, this tree can die, and that's our concern. In addition, we know that gypsy moth, since we don't have that many deciduous trees, we have a lot of conifers, they can survive. They do eat on conifers, and they do reproduce on conifers, so it's a risk for our conifer trees as a forest as well.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Denver?
Yes, Madam Chair, so it's when they're in the caterpillar stage that they do the eating and do the damage?
Representative Taylor, Senator Dembro, that's correct.
And presumably it would be during that phase that you would want to eradicate them.
That's correct.
Senator Hansel.
Do they have other food sources such as, besides trees, but other leafy, have they been known to shrubs or grasses or whatever?
Representative Taylor, Senator Hansel, or Co-Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, I describe some of the photos that I've seen from back east are that they'll eat themselves out of house and home. I mean, there are things they prefer to eat, and they'll eat those first, and then they'll move on.
Any other questions? I think you said a number, though. How many different type of plants do they consume?
Gypsy moth, Co-Chair Taylor, the Asian gypsy moth can eat up to 800 different species of plants.
Okay. So all right. And then is someone going to talk about how the spray is going to occur? I just think we just want this.
Sure.
Okay.
So, Co-Chair Taylor, the plan right now is we're forming an incident command system with our forestry partners to deploy a heli base up in the North Portland area that would do three treatments of the Bacillus thuringiensis kerstockii strain in the forest, starting late April and going through late May. So because of the 8,000 acres, it'll be split up based on when those caterpillars are hatching. There's quite a bit of topography in the area. If you think about Forest Park, and I'd like to, our Forest Park colleague can add to this, that means the caterpillars are going to hatch at different stages along that. So we've got sterilized egg masses along with models that we're running to be able to simulate when specifically that hatch will occur, and treatment will be based upon when they are very small larvae, immatures.
And then the only other question I have is it matter the temperature or any other environmental conditions you need in order to do the spray?
The main constraint will be the wind patterns, and because it is along that Columbia River waterway, mm-hmm. we'll be restricted to treating when the wind is below 8 miles per hour.
Okay. Does anybody have any other questions? And did anyone else want to talk? Or let's see. Was there another panel who wanted to come up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Co-Chair Taylor and members of the committee, my name is John Reed, and I've coordinated the Integrated Pest Management Program for Portland Parks and Recreation for 20 years. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of Portland Parks and Recreation and in support of the request for funding to fully implement the Oregon Department of Agriculture's program to eliminate the Asian gypsy moth outbreak in Oregon. Portland Parks and Recreation is the land manager for over 11,600 acres of parkland in Portland. We're responsible for stewardship of these green spaces, which include 3,500 acres of developed parks, 236,000 street trees and almost 8,000 acres of natural areas such as Forest Park. We are keenly aware of the devastating impact that establishment of this highly destructive pest would bring to not only these important resources, but to the quality of life of our city citizens. We are relying on this ODA effort to protect not only our parklands, but all of our city. When this insect pest has been detected in the past, ODA, along with their partner agencies, has successfully interceded and kept it from establishing, and our Bureau has always been a strong cooperator in these efforts. Their process is one of thorough monitoring, scientific evaluation, and review and careful implementation. It exemplifies the highest quality of progressive integrated pest management practices, and one that has been proven to be not only successful, but also an approach that carefully considers environmental issues. Their diligent work to detect this pest so early on allows for their focused and effective response and has been shown to prevent this highly destructive pest from spreading throughout the state and elsewhere. PPNR strongly supports ODA's funding request to help eradicate the newly discovered AGM population, and anything less than a full and adequate funding for this work would reduce its probability for success. Ensuring success is vital to protect Oregon's natural resources and its citizens, and to avoid rolling back the progress Portland has made in the last decade in expanding our tree canopy. Thank you for this opportunity to weigh in on this significant issue.
Thank you. Any other? Yes, Senator Denver.
Thanks, Madam Chair. You know, I fully support this effort, and I totally agree with you that we need to hit this hard and hit it fast in this narrow window. But there will be concern, right, about spraying happening, particularly in the urban area. And so I'm just wondering what City of Portland is intending to do in terms of getting the word out and alleviating people's fears.
Co-Chair Taylor and Senator Denbro, the lead agency in the outreach is Oregon Department of Agriculture, and we are a fully committed partner in this and have been working with them in this outreach. And I think the program that's been developed is robust and considerate because of these obvious concerns. And I have great confidence in the work that's been set up that it should be adequate.
Co-Chair Taylor, Senator Denbro, I'd also like to add that we've recently mailed out 4,000 direct mailers to the people in the target area, and then also in the vicinity. We're planning two open houses on the 17th and the 20th. These are open house style events where we have communication partners coming in to table with us and provide information to the community. And then we'll also be doing additional direct mailers, robocalls, text messages as this progresses. So we do see that outreach is one of the primary things that we can implement, and we're doing the best we can to get the most credible information by creating partnerships with Oregon Health Authority, National Pesticide Information Center, Oregon Poison Center, and several other pesticide or human health groups to get credible medical based scientific information to concerned citizens.
Okay, and just a follow-up. So how will you explain to people that the product is safe, you know, that it's organic and safe and not like fluoride? bring you for a moment into our world in the City of Portland.
Co-Chair Taylor, Senator Denbro, it's definitely a challenge. This particular insecticide is minimal risk. It's commonly used by organic gardeners for the control of caterpillar type pests. If you consume organic vegetables or produce, then there's a great chance that food was produced with Bacillus thuringiensis christakii. And so I think our strategy at this point is just to refer to it as an organically certified product. It's minimal or low risk, and then working with our Oregon Health Authorities who are trained in risk communication to address this with concerned citizens.
In the previous eradication efforts, did you use this same product then?
Co-Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, that's correct.
I would think then you've got a track record that I would encourage you to do. The other thing I would suggest, I'm sure you have, but I'm not sure whose Senate district or House district that would fall into, but you would want to make sure that those folks are, because they'll be getting calls from constituents, and if they're not briefed thoroughly, it creates an unnecessary problem.
Senator Hansel, good or bad, this happens to fall within Speaker Kotek's district partially, and
I think Senator Byrd,
I'm drawing a blank on his name.
So,
Whit?
No. Northwest Portland, Greenlick.
Greenlick. Yeah.
Forest Park, Speaker Kotek and her district staff are aware of this, and when I learned about it from our speakers here today, the speaker and I talked about it, so she's on top of it. So, and also, you really have come up with a long list of people that you're going to be reaching out to, including Multnomah County Health Department, and so the list is extensive of the folks you're interacting with.
Co-Chair Taylor and members of the committee, I want to assure you that we will have failed if our communication has not reached, with the best of our intentions, everyone that needs to be notified. Deputy Director Hansen and I have met with the legislators that it's in their district and have offered to them the phone numbers of our staff. If they get calls from anyone that's concerned and doesn't understand, we will have staff take the time to answer those questions. We may not be able to please everyone, but certainly want everybody to understand all of the why and the what and understand the product that is going to be used. That is very important to us. We do have hundreds of organizations that our staff are working with, including those in the city and the county, to make sure that we are talking. I think Clinton mentioned the homeless population there. We want to make sure that we have taken care of those folks in the best way that we can. There's some bald eagle nests that we know that are in the area. Our staff are working to mitigate those impacts. The other thing is we don't anticipate flying over these areas during the day when people are out and about. These are early morning applications. They're probably not going to be on the weekends, and nor do we want to do it when the kids are out going to school on their way on the bus. So there's a lot of logistics that have to go into this big effort to make sure that we have taken care of everyone. And so I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, I will ask LFO for their recommendation.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that a $539,338 general fund appropriation and a $1.7 million federal fund expenditure limitation increase be included in the end of session bill for eradication efforts of Asian gypsy moths.
And may I have a motion from a member, please?
I move we accept the recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Hansel. Is there any discussion? Any objections? And we need a carrier to the full.
No, you don't need a carrier.
Oh, I don't need a carrier. Apparently, that is not correct.
Nope, not anymore.
All right, so I'm going to close the work session for this. The motion carries. Close the work session, and then we will open up an informational hearing on Department of Agriculture report on potential future fee increases. And I understand we have Lauren Henderson here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just a little bit of an introduction. As you know, the legislature requires fees that are adopted when the legislature is not in session and after the budget's been passed to be ratified by the next legislative assembly or the next meeting of the legislature. And so now with annual sessions, there are some cases where the department knows they're going to be increasing some fees now that they weren't planning to when their budget was passed. And so the department's here to explain what they're going to do and which fees will be affected, who's been dealt with, who's been talked to. And then we will include a note in the budget report for the end of session bill that the department notified the legislature of these fee increases, and it will that way they will not have to go through the fee ratification process in the 2017 session.
Okay. And so are we going to be hearing from, yeah, so Lauren, you're here. Great, fantastic. And you want to talk a little bit more on the future fee increases, please?
Once again, Lauren Henderson. I'm the assistant director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We have two. One is the wholesale seed dealer's license, and the other one is our veterinary product registration fees. I just want to reiterate before I talk just briefly about both of them that we work really hard with our stakeholders on our fees. We really try to bring them in. We hope that most of our stakeholders know just about as much as about our funding and our budget as our staff do. That's really important for us. The wholesale seed dealer license fee just affects the wholesale seed dealers. We do have a retail license, and it's capped in statute at $750, and this would take it from $500 to $750. This was a request that came from the industry for us to put on the ground a half-time FTE to really work with the wholesale seed dealers on some education and outreach about the requirements of both federal and state requirements for labeling and packaging purity and those things. We've talked to them about that. It really was the current fee did not anticipate that kind of effort. We also need the fees to support the base program as well as the cost of living increases and the salary pot adjustments and those things. And so the fees are important for our agency. But really what we're going to be doing, we don't need an extra FTE. We believe we can reorganize in some other areas and dedicate a person that's being paid through some other fees to this effort and use the fees collected out of that. And really, I think it's more about making sure that everyone that's a wholesale seed dealer is a level playing field, that they're all understanding the same requirements and really out there working with folks. It is a regulatory oversight function, and that we have a source that people can call and extra boots on the ground, so to speak, for them to work with. And as I'd said before, we do have the support from the industry for this position. And I think it isn't unanimous support. I think you might find that some of the smaller seed dealers might struggle a little bit with the fee. We'll continue to work with this industry to see how it's going once we get that person on the ground and make sure we're touching bases with them. The other one is the veterinary product registration fee. This was part of our budget talk last time. It was in Senate Bill 255 when we were here before. The animal health program, you all helped us get a little more general funding or move some general funding around to help pay for our state vet. The vet products portion of that helps pay for the other funded portion of our agency in the animal health program. This raises the fee from $75, which I don't think has ever been raised in its history, if I remember correctly, 20 years or more, from $75 to $100. That gives us some extra dollars to put in there to make sure that the vets that we have are fully funded on that side, as there's just not enough general fund to support the work of the state vet. We do have one more fee that we were working on with the nursery industry that would have been on this, and I actually think it's in the fee bill that's going around. I thought I saw a line for it, but we pulled that back. There was still some concerns with the nursing industry about what that really meant for a fee increase. The director's office said, you know, we don't have their support and we need to pull it back. We have a meeting with them this afternoon, and so that's another one that's out there, but it's just not ready to go.
Okay. Do we have any questions? Yes, Senator Hanson.
In your outreach, have you worked with the agents or the people who will be paying these increased fees, like the veterinarians, and do you have their support or neutral, or what has your outreach been and what's been the response?
We have had several meetings on the wholesale seed dealer's license, and the proposed rules have been there and received comments on both of them. I think the vet products one, I'm not aware of any opposition to that. We did get some concerns early on the wholesale seed dealer's license, and the last I had heard, there was a consensus support for that fee.
Okay. Representative Hack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the seed growers, I just want to make sure I'm understanding this. You have enough in other fees you're charging to pay for the halftime FTE, so you're going to use this for other services for these folks. You said that they were okay with the fee increase. Do they realize that those dollars are not going to pay for that part-time person if they're going for something else? And can you give us a little bit more idea of what that what the boots on the ground folks, what would that be?
Co-Chair Taylor, Representative Hack, I may have confused the issue. The fee for the wholesale seed dealers is actually that extra, those extra dollars are going to be paying for that extra halftime. We didn't ask for an extra halftime FTE because we believe we either have through our seasonal programs a position that we can reallocate to that effort. That if we're all full, we would be using that person in another program. I'll use the nursery as an example. The nursery program right now is not in a good financial state without a very large fee increase. We may have some staff who we can reallocate their time from nursery because they can't afford to pay for a fully staff to do this effort. I'm speaking a little out of turn because I don't think we've quite figured out how the mechanics of that work, but what we're not going to use subsidize this program for another.
Okay.
We don't want to do that.
Thank
which
you.
I think is what your concern was.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, this is an informational hearing, and so we do not need to take any actions. Is that correct, Mr. LFO? Okay. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and close the informational hearing, and that should conclude the business for the day.
Adjourn the meeting.
Adjourn the meeting. Thank you. Thank you. For the day.
Adjourn the meeting.
Adjourn the meeting. Thank